I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. We recently passed a grim milestone. 1 million Americans died from COVID-19 in the last 2 years, leaving many more millions to deal with their loss and grief and make funeral arrangements. News coverage of the mass murders in Buffalo and Uvalde, among other communities, have given us a close-up view of family and friends overcome by profound sorrow. While death is a part of life, grief can take a psychological and physical toll. Our guest, Rebecca Sofer, lost both of her parents when she was a young adult. Her mother was killed in a car accident. Her father died 4 years later of a heart attack. There was no roadmap or guidebook to help her navigate the emptiness she felt. She co-founded the website Modern Loss to help others fill that void, creating a community and a place to share personal stories. Sofer's new book, The Modern Loss Handbook, is advice-free. Rather, it offers practical ways to manage grief, avoiding those well-worn cliches about death, providing pithy comebacks for what she calls toxic positivity. There's even a section on humor. Rebecca Sofer says, in grief, we are all beginners, and she joins us here in our Philadelphia studios. And Rebecca Sofer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, I'm delighted, Marty. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to cover, but let me begin with your parents. I know they died a number of years ago. How do you remember them today? How do you think about them?
Oh, wow, that's a really good question. I think about them differently than I thought about them, say, 15 years ago, because I'm older now, I'm a parent now, I'm partnered now, and I look at them more through the lens of that, through the lens of like, oh, I wonder what my mom would say about like this parenting question I have. Or also I look at her with more empathy as a woman, as opposed to just a daughter to her mother. It's just proof to me that the relationship still goes on, even though they're no longer here.
So you miss them, but you're not grieving them?
I don't view myself as a grieving woman. No, I don't. And there's a reason that I call it modern loss, because I think I'm living with loss. I think it's something that accompanies me, just like we all have our things that accompany it. We all have our own losses, right? And some of them are to death loss. Mine are, you know, when I talk about living with loss, I'm living with their absence, and it colors so much of the way that the world informs me, or I look at things, or I make decisions. But no, I don't view myself as a grieving woman. I feel like, for me, my personal definition of grieving is when I feel like it's kind of controlling me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that for quite some time. I feel more like I know that the waves are going to come. I don't know how big they'll be. I don't know when they'll come, but I know they will. And I know that I can weather them somehow. And I can live my life. In the meantime, I can live a joyful and meaningful life that is bittersweet all the time.
I like how you say, you know, in grief, we are all beginners. And you also write about, in a sense, for the person grieving, it's sort of your responsibility here, as you say, to absorb grief, figure it out, and live with it. I mean, that's something that you had to do, but you have to own it, right? You have to understand it. You have to make it your own.
You do. And it's kind of like a tough, lovey thing to say, and I'm mm-hmm. sorry to say it, but as someone who I wish the world would have handed me all the things that I needed on a nice satin pillow, you know, with like cartoon birds flying it into me, because, you know, I had a dead mom and I deserved that, as we all do. But that's just not the way the world works. It just is what it is. You know, grief is permeating the whole world. We all go through profound losses, and then the people around us are all very much consumed with their own lives, especially these days. We have so much going on. And so it really is up to us to figure out eventually, what do we need to make ourselves feel nourished, feel acknowledged and seen and heard? And also, where can we develop these coping mechanisms and find these ideas to help us through? And there's no one magic thing that's going to do it. How can we build little by little so that we feel like we're fumbling through our grief and then our extended long arc of loss in ways that make us feel like we've somehow got this. We have the mechanisms to get us through. We owe it to ourselves.
Sure. And I mean, grief is universal, but it's also unique to each individual about how they grieve, how they mourn their losses.
Yeah.
What did you need? I mean, as a younger person, you were in your 30s.
Yeah.
What did you need?
I needed, well, my mom was killed when I was 30. I was working full time in a daily TV show. So I needed like a breath. I needed a moment to take a breath because I was surrounded by so many people who were in the build mode of their lives, just as I was. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was very disorienting because I was like, oh, wait, I'm with you guys. I'm building up my life. I want to work all the time and like go out and have my life, but I'm also navigating profound loss. And what I needed was someone who understood somewhat what I was going through.
I needed
someone to listen to me. And I'm not just talking about a therapist or a counselor, which are integral to the process, I believe, but also just people, human people in the world who would make me feel like grief wasn't contagious and that what I was talking about was okay to talk about with them and they weren't going to run for the hills because of it or be scared off. And I wanted them to make me feel like a normal person and not like the person walking into the room where like the record screeched to a halt and then everyone was like, okay, wait, don't say anything because right. We don't want to upset her. I just wanted to feel like I could talk about it. That's what I needed most of all. And when I felt like I couldn't, that's when I felt really isolated. And by extension, I felt unacknowledged. And it's really hard to heal without feeling acknowledged.
Well, and modern loss is all about telling stories. I mean, it's as there's a in Jewish tradition, the sitting shiva, which I've done that where you tell the dead person's story or your story of that person who has died over and over and over. And it is healing to be able to say those words and to repeat oftentimes the same stories over and over.
Yeah, it's almost like ritualistic, right? Yes. I mean, because you don't have to be religious. I'm a very proud cultural Jew. I'm not religious, but I do love Shiva. I think it's an amazing ritual because it really, and if you think about it, the actual rules, if you look at it, is you're not supposed to talk to the person in mourning until they speak first. You're supposed to follow their lead. By the way, I didn't know this when I'm off. I didn't know any of the rules. Right. I was just like, I'm going to order the platter from Jaime's and
sit on the main line.
Right,
okay,
of course, all the platters and sit there and wait for, you know, people to like, hopefully make me feel better. But I do love the ritual aspect of Shiva because, yes, you are encouraged to talk about it. What I want people to know is that need to share, and not just to share about their person, because modern loss is not just talking about the people we lost. It's about life. It's a very life-affirming project. We're talking about the people left behind and what do they go through and how does that inform like their career decisions, who they sleep with, if they decide to have kids, where they want to live, you know, their financial decisions. We are trying to make it clear that this need to storytell goes way beyond the shiva or the wake or the first year when everybody thinks maybe that's the hardest period of time. No, we need an ongoing invitation to talk about our stuff forevermore.
Do you think, though, and death used to be more sort of within the family, within the community, people would die at home. That wasn't unusual. Now it is unusual that we've sort of lost the words to use or how, as you said, how to be with someone when they are grieving loss, that we're sort of at a loss for words.
Yeah. Oh,
because we don't.
Well done, Marty. You should have a radio show.
But because we don't have the words.
Yeah, we don't. We don't do a good job of normalizing this topic in our culture. And the consequence is that we fall short when it comes to supporting each other because our go-to vernacular is anchored in platitudes, right? Like they're in a better place or it takes a year. By the way, I know all of you who are listening know that it doesn't take a year. Or, you know, at least you were close or weren't you not so close? I mean, we just like go to these like rote things that we say to each other.
They're not in a better place?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Please, never. Not even to somebody who's religious, because I guarantee you that even people of the deepest faith would probably rather that their person be with them than whatever better place that may be, at least for a period of time. And so I think we go to these like go-tos because that's what we're told we should say. We want to provide meaningful support. verbally and through actions, but we're not trained to in society because this is like an othered type of conversation that we think is best relegated to therapy offices or religious circles or like just like one or two close friends who have been through it. And what I'm trying to do is normalize this because look at all the stuff we're talking about in the news. Like, sure. Why is it humanly possible that we are not comfortable talking about grief? We are a grieving world right now. And by the way, we've always been a grieving world. It's just painfully obvious right now. And so I'm trying to get us in some small way. I'm trying to do my small part in getting us to the point where we are more comfortable saying less like they're in a better place and more, I really wish I knew the right thing to say. And that, I literally don't know what it is. I don't know what the right thing to say is. And it looks so awful what you're going through, but I'm here. And like, I'm here to do X, Y, and Z, or I'm here to do whatever you need, and I'm going to keep checking in. To me, that goes so much further.
You had a piece in Time magazine recently, I guess it was around Memorial Day, headline, "Don't Say, Can't Imagine the Grief of Those Who Have Lost a Loved One." I've probably said that to somebody, but why is that, if not hurtful, not helpful?
Yeah, well, that was like a hot topic of conversation last night. I did my book event at Head House Books, which is like such an amazing place. And
it's in Philly to our
listeners.
It's
in Philly. Yes. Yeah, lots of copies there. But Richard is just delightful. And it was a hot topic because someone brought that up and said, oh my gosh, I say that all the time. And I was trying to say, well, read the piece because it's more the idea behind Don't Say I Can't Imagine, because what the piece was Time's lead essay in its issue covering 1 million COVID deaths in the United States, which, to be honest, the real number is more like 1.2 million and probably even more than that. And so I was saying a lot of times I was looking at that headline when we hit 250,000 deaths. And the New York Times headline was, you know, U.S. reaches 250,000 deaths, you know, 2 years ago, an unfathomable number. And yeah. I was like, well, it is fathomable. We're fathoming it. We just don't want to because it's very painful. So we're going to shut down because it's so incredibly painful to imagine. And my piece was more, when you say to someone, oh my gosh, you had a miscarriage or a stillbirth, I can't imagine what you're going through. Are you saying that and that's your thing that you're saying to offer support to someone and then you're going to go about your day? Or are you saying that saying, I really want to imagine. Like, right. I am open here. Can you please help me to understand?
Help me imagine.
Yes, yes. So I don't have a problem if you say, I can't imagine. It's more, what is the intent behind it? Mm. You know, is that like your closed statement or is it an invitation to engage more with a topic that, yeah, I don't want to talk about this stuff. I personally, Rebecca, I don't want to talk about all this stuff all the time, but there are people that are going through it. They can't feel so alone in it. We have to. We owe it to them. We owe it to ourselves because, you know, the secret is this stuff is going to happen to us.
Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation with our guest, Rebecca Sofer. She's got a new book. It's called The Modern Loss Handbook, an interactive guide to moving through grief and building your resilience. She co-founded the Modern Loss website, and we are talking about losses and grief. We'll be talking about humor as well. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Rebecca Sofer. She co-founded the popular website Modern Loss after the death of both of her parents. Her new book, The Modern Loss Handbook, is a practical guide to grieving, how to honor a loved one, manage your sadness, find humor in life, rebuild your life. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And we want to hear your stories because storytelling is so important to this process. Let me pick up on something, and you mentioned the fact, and it is true that we have in the last couple of years, but probably forever, but certainly felt it in the last couple of years, just surrounded by death. And even if you didn't lose someone to COVID, it was there, you know, surrounding us, or even with all the gun violence. And I see reporters, you know, interviewing people who have lost a loved one. And I get uncomfortable because I worry they're going to ask the wrong questions. And I wonder whether you look at those scenarios, let's say on TV, and what your thoughts are and where to go when you're talking to a perfect stranger and it's being broadcast to the world.
Yeah, well, that must be, look, I have a lot of compassion for reporters out there right now because they personally, you know, just to go back to what you're saying, we've had so much societal grief over the last couple of years. We're in the third year of a pandemic that is still making it very clear that it is here, that it's not over. We've lost roles. We've lost our sense of control over the present day and maybe dreams for the future, hopes for the future. And we've had the addition of roles that we didn't anticipate, and we've lost coping mechanisms and access to touching people and celebrating with them and mourning with them, and even just like that coffee that we used to have with coworkers that we hung our sanity on every Thursday at 2. We have lost so much. And of course, as you mentioned, there has been so much societal grief in the form of mass shootings. Oh my gosh, it's just been awful, and violence against, you know, racially motivated violence, anti-Semitism. I mean, you name it, we've had it. And so I think like we've all been grieving and we've all been living with trauma and feel like we've been flying by the seat of our pants emotionally, like we're just barely keeping our emotional heads above water. And it's exhausting. And I want to just take that moment to say to people that if you're feeling like you're grieving right now, even if you didn't lose somebody to a death, you are grieving. Mm-hmm. You have every right to feel like you are living with grief, and it's worth examining and thinking about how you can get the right help through it, because you don't just have to have had a death loss to feel like you're living with loss right now. And I think that, yeah, reporters, right? I think I follow the Center for the DART Center at Columbia for, you know, reporting on trauma. Mm-hmm. And I feel like every reporter should definitely go through trauma-informed reporting training right now, because it's almost like every reporter is doing trauma reporting. Right down to this morning, I listened to the old Daily episode from last week about the baby formula shortage, and that was traumatizing. I felt terrible for this reporter. And so, yeah, it's just I think that when you're talking to a stranger, you need to remember that they're a human person and that you should not ask them to reveal details that they don't want to reveal.
Right.
And you need to follow their lead. I mean, I'm not talking about like if you're in the media now. I'm talking about if you're talking to someone who you know has had a deep loss, you don't need to know details. Like, that's not going to help you help them. You don't need to know if they were wearing a seatbelt or if they were, you know, a smoker or if they were, you know, at high risk in for COVID. You don't need to. That doesn't matter. All that matters is that they're grieving. And so what's better is to ask how they're feeling, how they're doing today, how they're doing in any given moment. What is the hardest part for them of any time? What do they need at this moment? These are better questions to ask somebody.
And those are personal and dealing with, in certain ways, the here and now. Reading your book, though, I was also thinking about, I mean, some people grieve the loss of a parent or a family member or a friend. And some people are, I won't say glad, but are relieved and sort of feel the sense of that they're not grieving. And then they worry that I'm not grieving for this person who was so important in my life, but there were conflicts that stood in the way, things we said to each other that make it, I guess, hard to grieve. And maybe not every death is worth a grief.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, first of all, it's a big part of the section on memory and, you know, what was and what might have been, because I argue that sometimes remembering the hard things are as important, if not more important, than remembering, you know, that their favorite recipe or their favorite movie, because the hard stuff is what stays with us. And that's stuff that, isn't heartwarming and that we are left to contend with after a loss on our own because we can never talk to that person about it. And there's no such thing. I think closure is a mythical term in life. I don't believe that is a thing ever, except for like a physical door that is closing. but I think that, you know, you need to think through some of the tough things. You need to think through, was there a time when they didn't apologize to you and it's still lingering? Or is there something that was left unsaid that you wish you had said to them? Or is there a time where they really hurt you and you're so resentful and dealing with anger? These are very important things to think through because regardless, they'll stay within you, even if I don't ask them of you. And you might want to think through them and take them to somebody who can help you work through those things. Because if not, you know, there's this book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh, it does. Yeah. I mean, it stays in there. And if you don't work through it, it will come out somehow in some form at some time. So why not let me be like your tough, lovey friend who's also going to hopefully make you smile when you need it and ask you the things now you can consider them. I think that relationships are not tied with a perfect bow and that when people think that they are feeling relieved or then they feel guilty, and then maybe that's not grief. But actually, to me, that is grief. That is part of grief. Mm-hmm. And they are grieving. I think that guilt and indifference and relief are all aspects of grief. And there shouldn't be any guilt associated with that, because how can you feel guilty for having a feeling?
Well, and thinking about families and people telling stories, and what I find so interesting is that people growing up in the same family can tell completely different stories about this person, you know, that they have lost.
Yeah, I mean, every person has a completely different dynamic with their person, even within families. Let's just say, you know, a mom dies and you have three siblings. Like, one sibling could look at the other sibling saying, well, you were the favorite, or like, you know, I had a different, you know, mom treated me differently. Or, I mean, there are just so many different dynamics that go into grief, and it does bring out the best of us and the worst of us and the weirdest in us. And all you can do is really remind yourself that this person's dynamic in the family is different. They have a different memory. Even if you've shared memories, they have their own memories and their own feelings. And that's one of the reasons that I make a really strong case for people to consider grief counseling as part of their plan, because it is an unbiased space in which you have a sounding board that has no pre-existing, you know, thoughts of the person who died. And you can speak freely without fear of judgment or being talked out of things or toxic positivity or anger.
Is toxic positivity, is that your word? I mean, yeah. it perfectly describes.
I wish I were that creative. No, but I like the phrase.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we say it, certainly when it's applied to these situations, I think people know those things that are said, I guess, well-meaning, but the impact is so pernicious.
Yeah. I mean, I think partially goes back to what I'm saying about how we haven't normalized talking about grief to the point where we don't automatically go to these like little sayings that we offer. But also, I do think that there are certain, you know, people who are really not open to, they don't want to know about your pain. And they'll say things like, look on the bright side, or they'll send you lots of text with like prayer hands and, you know, no bad days, or just be happy because of this. It's time to move on. And I do feel like I am a big fan of giving people lots of chances, right? Because people don't know how to manage this stuff. And I do encourage people to not cut people out of your life right away, because people do learn. They do learn, and sometimes it takes them years to learn. But if you have someone in your life and you're living with a loss and you have someone who is constantly trying to negate the fact that you're going through something really hard through one of these sayings or through doing something that's making you feel actually kind of bad, you might want to think about whether it's time to draw some boundaries, either temporarily, after you try and talk to them if they're not responsive about it, or permanently, because not everybody can deal with or will want to deal with what you're going through. And that's a tough pill to swallow, which is you might lose some friends.
Yeah.
It sucks.
But you give people permission to say, I don't want you to say that.
Absolutely.
I don't like it when you say that. I mean, those very direct responses.
Yes, because we all have agency. And like I was saying earlier, I mean, I do wish the world would treat us with kid gloves when we're going through hard times, but that's just not the way the world is. It is up to us as the people who are moving through our own mess to figure out where people have crossed the line with us. And how can we speak up to say when that's not helping or it's hurtful or what we wish they would say instead? Because not everybody can intuit what you need done for you or what you need to hear at any given moment in time. Not even you know. Like, a grief is such a weird, strict mistress. Like, yes, you can feel differently at like 2:05 p.m. and then feel totally differently at 2:07 p.m. I've been there. And so you really do need to figure out, like, what would you say in response to somebody who said, well, at least you can always have another baby? I literally pose these questions to you because guess what? Someone eventually is going to say that to you, and you might be stunned into silence and then later be so angry and hurt and wish that you had said something. So I ask you these questions in the book and say, well, okay, think about now what you would like to say in response. Because I promise you, someone's
going to say that. Well, you have, and I can't read some of it because it's, I would get in trouble on the air.
I have a potty mouth.
But what people are thinking to themselves, well, what you say instead, my child is not replaceable. It's not okay to say that to me.
Yeah, because it's not. And I think that what I want people to realize is that they have agency. You know, there's this term, empower yourself. No. You don't have to empower yourself. You have power already. You don't need to get it from the outside. You just need to think through some of these scenarios and think through ways in which you feel like you're being actionable and standing up for yourself and sharing your own narrative. Modern Loss was founded on the tenet that storytelling is a change agent. Mm-hmm. And when we encourage people to share their narratives with the world, that does remind them that they are empowered already, that they have agency, and that if they share their truths within, you know, the realm of what they're willing to share, maybe they can get more of what they need from the world.
That's Rebecca Sofer, our guest today on Radio Times, and she's got a new book, The Modern Loss Handbook. And as always on Radio Times, email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You take issue with denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, the idea that there are these discrete paths that people will go through, and then you get to the other end, and then you're essentially done with grief. You call it an utter expletive deleted show.
Marty, you're making me sound like a blue comedian.
But nonetheless, and you have some images here of sort of what I guess probably in this space of 24 hours, someone can feel everything the sun.
And right, I think I actually, oh, here we go.
62.
Right, it's called The Less Pithy But Way More Accurate Stages of Grief. And there were so many that I had to tell my editor, I'm like, I think you're going to need a 2-page spread for this one. And it's a flow chart of all the different things that you might go through, and sometimes in one day. And like, these are just, you know, like crying at Subaru commercials, throwing cocktails at Subaru commercials, feeling guilt from not feeling horrible for forgetting an important anniversary, you know, or feeling like you can do this somehow, afraid of cocktail parties or hating people. No, I need people. No, I actually do hate people. And yes, like, is it meant to make you smile? Absolutely, because grief has ludicrous aspects like this that you have to laugh at sometimes because you have to remember you're still human. But also it shows that, yeah, like, with all respect to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and I do quote her, my lead quote in the book
like
is
it.
A beautiful quote by her. But people should know that those stages of grief were not meant for people who are grieving the loss of somebody. They were meant for people who were dying. And so, sure, great. Okay, if you want to say there are 5 stages of grief when you're grieving, go for it. But please know that those stages are not in order. They are not finite. And they will go, you know, like sometimes it's like 1 step forward, 6,000 steps back, and involves you throwing your Mai Tai at a Subaru commercial 10 years later when something triggers you. And that's okay. It's okay. As long as you're not hurting yourself or anybody else, why can't you just live your loss in the way that feels authentic to you?
Well, you mentioned humor, and we were talking before going on the air, and I shared the fact that, and I think this isn't unusual, how many times I have been to a funeral or a memorial service and just fallen over in almost like the laughter you felt when you were 8 years old. I have a feeling it's partly people's defenses are down, or you just sort of feel vulnerable in a certain kind of way. And it's a stress reliever too, but
it is. It is. I'm a big believer in using humor. And I want to say that I know there are situations where there is nothing funny.
Yes.
We know what's in the news. I have deep respect. I have worked. I gave a talk for Sandy Hook a couple of months ago for the Connecticut Children's Hospital, their annual Sandy Hook lecture. I absolutely know that there are some situations where there is no room for any humor whatsoever. I am talking about the 85% of people who will have a profound loss and move through it in ways that will enable them to live joyfully and richly and still, yes, with bittersweetness, but manage to move through it and figure out ways to kind of develop coping mechanisms and live communally with this. And so when I talk about humor, I'm also talking about it in the long arc of things. Because like you say, at a funeral, defense mechanisms are down. We're all nervous. And I encourage people. People say, when is it okay to laugh? And I say, whenever you want to laugh. Like whenever laughter is spilling out of you, embrace that moment. Because I promise you're going to feel like crap. don't worry. You're going to feel really bad and probably a lot. So if you are presented with a moment where you're doubled over in laughter, hang on to that with all you have. Because it not only, sure, it's a release, but it also reminds you, and when you're in a state that feels so foreign, that you're still you. You still are human. You're still alive. It's so important to connect with that. You know, that feeling. And also it's a big connector with other people. It's a really good way to share experiences and break the ice and say, oh, we can talk about this stuff with each other.
I mean, nothing like a group laugh, right?
There really isn't. There's
As
not.
Someone who worked on the Colbert Report, right?
Yeah,
you would know.
And, you know, I think that when it comes to the topic of grief and loss, you know, modern loss, we do things and we do things unapologetically in our tone. It's very tongue-in-cheek sometimes. We use humor. We use obscenities. We use whatever. Who cares? At Colbert, I was taught sometimes the best way to educate people about things that are hard or scary is with warmth and levity. And so that's what I do.
Another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Rebecca Sofer. Again, talking about her new book, The Modern Loss Handbook, an interactive guide to moving through grief and building your resilience. We got some comments here. More after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times. I jumped the gun here. Here on WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Rebecca Sofer about loss and grief. She's got a new book. It's called The Modern Loss Handbook. Let me read a couple of comments here. A listener's email says, comments like never say this or never do that seem contradictory because at the same time you are acknowledging that everyone experiences grief differently. One person may not like hearing they're in a better place now, but for someone else, it may bring solace. It's wrong to set rules for what can and cannot be said. I mean, that's picking up on something that we were talking about earlier. Can you speak to that?
Sure. And you're right. Everybody has their own experience. But we believe, and, you know, I've been lucky to work with so many wonderful grief organizations and therapists over the years, that it's better to follow somebody's lead than impose your belief on them. If they want to be told they're in a better place, great, if that comforts them. But you may not know that. So that's why I say, please don't assume you know what the other person wants. They may not want assurances. They may not want to know that there's a timeline. They may not want to be told they're in a better place. Ask them how they're feeling, you know, and that's what it's like. Ask them an open-ended question that lets them control the narrative instead of you giving them the narrative.
And is that the important first question? How are you feeling?
Yeah. Or like, how are you today? Or what's hard today? You know, just I'm a big believer in anchoring something within the mm-hmm. moment mm-hmm. because when someone says, how are you? That feels very overwhelming to me. To me, I'm a feeler. Like someone said that when I was made, there was like a bargain on feelings at the Feelings Factory. And like that, then like they,
and
that's
your parents
all in me, right?
Spend all their money.
Right.
In the feelings
yeah. And
factory.
It was, yeah. So that's how I'm made. And so when someone says, how are you? And I'm really overwhelmed, I shut down. Like right. I just clam up and I say, I'm fine, because I don't want people to know how I'm really feeling, because I might lose it. If someone says, how are you today? Ah, you've given me an assignment. How am I today?
Oh,
okay. You know, today's really hard because of this, that, or the other. Or like, you know what's weird? Like today I had this moment and it was kind of silly. Like you're inviting like more like micro storytelling, which is more manageable for people, especially in early grief when they're feeling overwhelmed.
Rather than the big narrative sort of
right,
having
right.
that answer to those
exactly.
profound
you're not,
questions.
Right, it's like you're not asking them to tell their year of magical thinking. You're just asking them to say, did
you
eat
today?
Did you remember to put deodorant on?
Here's an email from Patty. She says, my mother suffered from dementia for 12 years before she died. Mm-hmm. I was with her when she died, and my first thought after she took her last breath was she finally escaped. I'd already been mourning her for years. I mean, that's yeah. a really profound and important comment there.
Absolutely. And I'm so sorry that this happened to you.
Yeah.
And I think that anticipatory grief is a very real type of grief that we don't legitimize enough in our culture. And I think people like brushing it aside, and even caretakers, because you were probably caretaking her and you were running low on fumes and you were probably feeling guilty when you were feeling exhausted from it. And so, of course, you would feel relieved in some way to be relieved of those duties and that pain and the suffering. And I think that people who are dealing with long losses, long declines, they have so much anticipatory grief and they don't get themselves the right support then. They say, well, when they die, it's going to be really hard. Or people around them say, we've got to prepare because when X dies, it's going to be really hard for her. No, no, no. It's hard
now.
For her now. And this is grief. It's just a different type of stage or whatever you want to call it. It's a different type of feeling grief, but you need the right support. You need it now and you deserve it.
We were again talking during off the air during the break, and I mentioned the fact that I'm an older person. And so I don't feel like death is imminent. But I'm aware that I'm mortal mm-hmm. and that, you know, that I've got much more behind me than I have in front of me. And I think it does make you aware that these moments, you know, life on earth really matters. And then, of course, you've got friends that are struggling with their own health issues. And it makes you live differently, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when you're very much aware that you have a timeline that's finite and you don't know what timeline,
right.
what the length of that timeline is. And some of us, you know, we are made aware of that earlier than when we get older, as I was, in some weird way. By the way, I'd give anything to not have to, to have had this happen
sure.
in my life, but it is what it is. And in many ways, it's made me embrace life a lot more because I'm so aware that moments are not coming back and I don't mm-hmm. exactly know how many more I have. It doesn't make me a morbid person. In fact, I think it makes me more open to risk taking, to being in the moment, to being open to like those moments of joy and like really sinking into them, because I know that like they're really precious. You know,
yeah.
I'm still like super neurotic and freak out over little things. I'm absolutely not a zen person, but I do feel like I allow myself to really be like, wow, my gosh, like this is a moment. Like let's mm-hmm. let's appreciate it.
Do we have people on the phone? Do we have people on the phone? Consuela? Yes, okay. Let's get Consuela to join our conversation.
Hi
there, Consuela. Sure, go ahead.
So I was explaining to the young lady and your author lost her parents, and I recently lost my spouse.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And one of the hardest things, I'll say this first, has been when I had to tell people and make those professional phone calls, is accepting that condolence. So that first 2 months, if I had to call somewhere and someone would say, I'm sorry, I had to hang up because I would break down.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be professional and try to do what I needed to do to get through that. So you're 100% right. Everybody is totally 100% different. I called because I wanted opinions, and I know 100% everybody moves through grief at their own level, and we can't consider other people's opinions and what they do think of us, but that is part of life as well. As I said, it's been 6 months, and I am finally able to say that he passed without breaking down crying, right?
Yep.
And I feel like I am coming out of just pretending to be here and doing what I'm supposed to do. And I want to get back to living again. And part of that getting back to living is enjoying the company of a male. I worry about my daughter and my grandkids and how they'll perceive that if that's 6 months. It's like, wow, Mom, you really, you know, couldn't wait. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts on that? And
well, first of all, Consuela, you called into a radio show to share these really intimate feelings that you have, and we really appreciate that. I think it's a real public service, and you know, you have a lot of decisions to make going forward. Let me see what Rebecca has to say.
Yeah, well, Consuela, first of all, I'm so sad for you that you lost your husband. That must be so hard. And 6 months, I'm talking about with regard to your grief, is nothing. You need to be kind to yourself. If you break down in another 6 months on a work call, so be it. I was breaking down for years. Like, I still go to call my mom 16 years later and like hit myself on the head because I'm like, oh, she's been dead for so long. So I hope that you are very kind to yourself as time goes on, because you were probably with him for a lot longer than 6 months or a year. So why would your grief just dissipate after that time? And with regard to, like, you know, work, I read a lot about this in the book about people who still have to get through work life and deal with professional things and stand up for their grief. And you might want to find a point person who can help you disseminate information if this is getting to be too much for you. With regard to dating, you know, this is a judgment, personal judgment call, and I think that you really need to think about your deservedness to live a rich life. This is your life, and you deserve to be happy, and you deserve to live it if you want to live it in partnership with somebody so you can experience things together. You deserve that. And so it's just about having conversations, open conversations with your family about that. And I do encourage you to find a grief counselor who can guide you through when you are about to have these conversations.
Now, Consuela, I'm sorry.
I see two therapists. So one is strictly for grief, and one is my husband's counselor, therapist that they saw and knew the relationship and can help me navigate some of those things.
Okay.
Part of the big grieving was what I had expected the future to be for us, and that future now is not possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Consuela, you've said so many important things, and I really appreciate the call to Radio Times. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Marty.
Rebecca, going back, picking up what she just said, I mean, we do have expectations, visions of the future that don't happen.
Yeah. And you know what? The clinical term is it sucks, right? It sucks. It sucks that the people who we thought were going to be accompanying us along this journey and posting on Instagram about and tagging them they're not going to be taggable in our present day and in our future. And that's so hard and it's sad. And it also is what it is. And I'm not trying to sound unfeeling. I'm trying to say that when you really come to a point where you can accept that you are living with the loss of this person, then you can start figuring out how you can create meaning from this loss and move forward through a life that is going to be rich. And you will have those experiences. You will have, you know, those adventures. You're just not going to have them with that person.
Yeah.
You might have them on your own, with your friends, with another partner, and you deserve it. I mean, I think that you have to get to a point where you have to say, I deserve to have this. I am alive. We love judging people in our culture. We love saying they're dating already. Who are you to judge?
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone has a right to console themselves and to support themselves in the the way that they feel like they need to. And as I always say, if you're not hurting yourself or anyone else, you need to do what feels right for you.
Let me see what Joanne has to say. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there, Joanne.
I just wanted to turn off my my car. I'm in the car.
Okay.
Yeah, I lost my daughter to suicide on August 12, 2010.
So sorry.
And thank you. And I lost friends over that. And you had said that, you know, you can tell people how that was something that is not helpful. And I didn't do that. And I feel bad about that. I know I shouldn't, or I should. I don't know what I should feel. But, you know, I did. I had a group of friends who just didn't respond the way I thought they should. And that was hard. That was hard. I've since gotten new friends who kind of know how to react, and they're younger. You know, I don't know. It was very hard.
And, yeah.
And dealing also with all the comments that you get, I'm definitely, by the way, buying this book because I think I need it. And I had counseling for over a year because otherwise I would have been a puddle.
Sure, sure. Well, Joanne, you've had to deal with so much. And in this book, it's interesting, Rebecca, you do talk about, you know, friends you hold on to, mm-hmm. and the new friends that become into your orbit, into your life.
Yeah. And I'm just so sorry that you went through such an excruciating loss. And I'm sure that 12 years must feel like a drop in the bucket sometimes, like a nanosecond and forever. And I'm sorry for you that your friends, for the most part, could not tell you what you needed to hear. And suicide is one of those things that we call like the taboo times twos when it comes to the grief experience, like murder or like AIDS-related illness or even COVID. Like, it's like, oh, people get even more uncomfortable. We don't know what to say. We don't want it to touch us. And that's awful because all it does is make the survivor feel so alone when they're already grappling with all these what ifs and what could have beens and everything. And so I'm sorry that your friends weren't there for you. But in the book, I do write about, you know, how do you build your support team? How can you take the friends who are there for you or the people who are, and then be open to the people who will come out of the woodwork for you? Because I really do believe that if you search for it or you're open to it, you can expand that circle of support a lot more than the circle that already existed. It's not easy, but I really do believe it.
Joanne, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me read a couple of comments. One from Jeanette. I lost a sister, father, a mother. I think it's important to know that it's okay to feel relief at the same time as grief, relief that they are no longer suffering. An email from Sue. In February, my son died of a massive heart attack at 53, left two daughters in their 20s. I'm making each of them a photo album of his life. I was going to put in my commentary throughout. Should I ask them to edit it or put in some of their own memories? I mean, we have almost no time to respond to that. But there are ways to memorialize and personalize these kinds of losses.
So many. And you don't have to do it right away, right? I mean, I'm not saying, hey, like your husband just died, make a book tomorrow. No, you could do it in 5 years, whenever it feels right, whenever it's coming out of you that like, you know what, I need to take Father's Day and make it into something that's less of a painful day. I need to take the death anniversary and make it into something more that's like not so awful for me. You know, there are so many ways to create bespoke holidays that stem from who that person was, what they believed in, what you shared. There are ways to reframe other days, you know, that speak to your relationship with them. And of course, we don't have time, but like, I encourage you to do these projects because they are the small ways that make you feel like you have some control in a situation that feels so uncontrollable.
And you said the word deathiversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, deathiversary, death date. You know, that's in the grief world, we all know what the deathiversary is. Right. And, you know, those can be very painful days. And my hope for all of you is that they become days that are less excruciating as time goes by, you know, as they're supposed to be. But you got to get the right support in order for them to be that. And not just formal support, but communal support, peer-to-peer support.
Rebecca Sofer, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. And the book is called The Modern Loss Handbook, an interactive guide to moving through grief and building your resilience. And she co-founded Modern Loss, which is a website. You should definitely check it out. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs. You can also and always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.